get yourself a vodka, get out of here. Yeah. Put the boys in the better now. You're always talking about.
And good afternoon. It is 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM, located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Coming up on the show today, in the first hour from the December 4th and the Journey Continues open mic reading in that monthly series. You'll hear readings in the first round that evening by Chantal Lavoie, Meg Freer, Pierce Newman, Sophie Vallad, Navraj Santu, Deborah Brown, Alana Veach, Jan Allen, Feely, Will Anderson, Keen Ryan, Eric Folsom, Anna Johnson, and me. And in the second hour, from again that December 4th and the Journey Continues open mic event, you'll hear a pre-recorded first reading by Gretchen Huntley, and then readings from the second round that evening there by Chantal Lavoie again, Meg Freer, Deborah Brown, Jan Allen, Will Anderson, Keen Ryan, Eric Folsom, Anna Johnson, Elena Gustafson, and again, me. I do want to thank all of you who donated to our annual funding drive that ran from November through December. We had a $25,000 funding drive goal, and I believe we ended up at the end of December with something like $22,500 or close to that. So very close to hitting it. But what I wanted to mention too is, because it's my understanding that you can, the federal government has announced that charitable donations are eligible to be claimed for the 2024 tax year through February 28th, that we're keeping the funding drive open basically for that reason. If you want to, if you wanted to donate and you get a chance and but wanted the tax deduction, you can still get that. So I just wanted to mention, but mostly I'm wanting to thank all of those of you who did donate. So, and one thing too, let's see, just along those same lines, a number of donations were sent with requests for a tax receipt. I know through this show, but I mean, people that I know, but a number of others were sent at levels that qualified them instead for gifts or other offerings, depending on the level of donations. One of which was that if a person wanted to, they could request like three songs to be played on air. And so in addition to the readings from the Elm today, I'll also be playing three songs that were requested by Meg Freer, who donated, and she said it was okay to use her name. So you're going to hear three songs, two from one by one artist and one by another artist throughout the course of the 2 hours. So it'd be fun kind of playing a little music on here mixed in with the readings. I haven't done that in quite a while. And right before I do air the readings, just my usual start of the hour announcement. It is occasionally that some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but it's all played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. As always, again, there was a wonderful crowd and great evening at the December 4th and the Journey Continues open mic reading with its readings in the round. For those of you that aren't familiar with that, it's a person reads a poem and then passes the mic metaphorically, I guess, to the next poet, since we don't have a mic. I then record them to air here in groups of usually 3 to 5 readers. So let's listen to that first batch. You've heard me long enough. Up first, reading that evening, you're going to hear readings by Chantal Lavoie, Meg Freer, Pierce Newman, and Sophie Vallad. And let's see if we're all queued up here. I think we are. Here we go. Welcome, everybody, on this definitely winter night. So, and this is our last reading of the year. For those of you who haven't been here as well, I will just explain how it works. It's the readings are done in the round. Poet gets up, reads a poem, and then symbolically, I guess, passes the mic on to the next poet. So that's how we'll go through a first round like that. Then we start, have an intermission, and then we do a second round. Kelly, don't want to put you on the spot, but are you reading? I can sign you up. Okay, that's all good. Thanks for coming out. Okay, let's bring up our first poet this evening, Chantal Lavoie.
Thanks, Bruce. I haven't been here in a while. Thanks to everybody who's here. I look forward to hearing you read also. Yesterday, I got happy news from the new quarterly that they're publishing three of my poems, and I've been wanting to be in there for a long time. So I'm going to read one of those three, and it's from a trio called The Boy Poems, and this one is titled Burning Bright. Burning Bright. He paces the living room cage, brain on fire under red fur, round and round and round the square room. He has learned about grades from another in the pride. His first report cardboard clutched in his claws hisses S's for satisfactory. But he has learned there are A's and B's. Letters are not just sounds you shape your mouth to, or circles and lines you bend your bones to make, meaning apple, meaning ball. Letters are scraps of meat thrown over the barricade and lashes that flay. I'm going to bang my head against the wall every day until I get A's, he growls. The bars of the cage writhe. Thank you.
So we give Chantal another hand. Let's bring up Meg Freer.
Thanks, Bruce. I'll do my monthly plug for the Quirks of Human Nature show at the Royal Tavern, poetry performed with improvised music. Unfortunately, Corey is not here, but those of you who've seen Corey Tokay here reading as Harlequin Crow, he will be our featured poet, along with Shenanigans, which is a duo of guitar and flute, Ann Archer and Don McClurg. They're very good. And probably Selena Torelli will do some storytelling or whatever. Anna Johnson, who's often here, who isn't here tonight, she'll be one of the bonus poets. And and then in January, I'm doing all science poetry show with Michael Castiles on the guitar. So the poster's up there if you want to see it. This is called Evening When the Dogs Howl. Some poor sod howls in the emergency room hallway, filled with other chaps on gurneys, and he can't help but yell for help in all the clatter and chaos, and the dogs in the doctor's heads howl because there are no beds to put all these people, and another poor soul howls as she arrives, only to have her body expire while she waits, and a frail elderly woman howls in pain and dismay at the noise and bright lights, until a nurse finally squeezes both her and the poor sod from the hallway into a closet converted into a room meant for one. And she listens to the man howl and calls to the staff, he must be 100 years old and he's very sick. Give him a bed first. And the animal shelter dogs howl for their humans who won't be coming back. And the ambulance sirens howl as they bring more suffering, those living on the streets and in tents, into the ER hallways. And the nurses and doctors howl and collapse at the end of their shifts and wonder how their hospitals got this way. Thank you.
As we give Meg another hand, let's bring up Pierce Newman.
Hi, everyone. First time here, but I'm excited to be here and listen to everyone's talk. So thank you. Earworm. Invade my personal space. Push my boundaries. Get in my face. Reach into me and play on the strings of my heart whatever melodies you desire. I can be your destiny or symphony. I'll be your muse, your rock, your blues. I'll even be your guitar too. You can shred me to pieces or to tunes. Play me however you please. Please, don't let me be another unfinished melody. Sing me over and over until your vocal cords are sore and your throat can't take it anymore. I want to be your earworm. Hum me day in and out. Go insane, shout. Attempt to rid me from your head. Let it be impossible to. I need to be stuck up there, every next song in the queue of your mind, so at any given time, I'll be playing in your thoughts with a rhyme. Time may go by, but during the silence, I will reappear and make you ask, why? Why can't I get you out of my head? So you will snap your fingers, click your tongue, nod your head, and drum your thumb. Because like a metronome, I won't stop ticking. In your eardrums, I'll be on the bass pedal kicking. I know I can annoy you from time to time, but may I ask, would you harmonize with me for the rest of our lives? Thank you.
As we give Pierce another hand, let's bring up Sophie Vallad.
Well, that's not too bad, just a bunch of faces staring at me. That's okay. I haven't been here for a while. I skipped town, went a bunch of other places, but like a black hole, Kingston kind of sucks you back in. It's hard to escape the event horizon. So this poem's from a new project I'm working on with a friend. It's about a lot of things. It's long and weird and complicated, but it's about a meeting between two literary characters, so Frankenstein's creature and Virginia Woolf's Orlando. Apologies to any classic rock fans before I begin. Okay, so it's called Immortal Lady Orlando Meets Victor Frankenstein's Creation. If you expected this poem to be an encounter between a transsexual and a monster, sorry to disappoint, but you should know that Frankenstein is the name of the scientist, and that he is the monster, not the creature created by the doctor, who was still a medical student at the time. Victor Frankenstein, much like Prometheus, stole fire from the gods, and at the stroke of lightning gave birth to a son. The creature, who is given no name, is greeted by the poet Orlando. Noble blood assigned male at birth, Orlando went to sleep one day and awakened as a woman, a common experience for transsexuals. Lady Orlando trained the creature in English literature and contemporary poetics. Like any good poetry professor, she covered the canon, taught critiques and extensions, and had him read The Oak Tree, of course. The creature, confronted with such eternal anachronism, spoke back to his creator. My words to Victor Frankenstein, touchstone transsexual text. Prometheus was punished for his indiscretions, his liver devoured daily by eagles, like a carnivore consumes its prey, praying for absolution. Yet the gods do not abide, even though they also hate the eagles, much like the Coen's Lebowski, or anyone with ears, really. If Frankenstein were to be punished for parental neglect, sentenced to eternity at the Hotel California, with the eagles on repeat, destroying his liver by drinking the draft. There is no repentance on tap. Immortal Lady Orlando, in true transsexual fashion, grants Frankenstein's creation with the selection of a name. Giving someone a name is an act of violence, depriving them of choice. Giving someone a name is an act of love, affirming their existence. When a transsexual chooses a name for herself, she defies the will of God, blasphemy against her parents, against Olympus. A name is like a fire that lights up the world. Without names, we cannot see. Without eyes, we cannot name. I give myself a name so that I might burn my eyes in its everlasting flame. Even when reduced to embers, echoes of my name remain. All names are born to fade like fire in the endless night. Victor Frankenstein might be your father, but it is your mother by whom you were raised, and it is yourself by whom you were named. Orlando was not transformed into a woman as a punishment, but as a gift for provoking snakes with her poems, like Tiresias with her stick. Sometimes we distance ourselves from our past and our parents. The creature chooses Victor Frankenstein as his name, as a reminder, a warning, and an act of reclamation. Frankenstein is the monster because he abandoned his son. The monster is Frankenstein because he took his father's name. When we create fictional characters, when we write them into tragedies, we overwrite their agency, sometimes to prove a point. But one day the sun will rise, we will gaze at the sky from our chains atop the mountain, and there will be not a single bird in sight.
And you just heard from, again, the December 4th and the Journey Continues monthly open mic reading held at the Yom Cafe. Readings by Chantal Lavoie, Meg Freer, Pierce Newman, and Sophie Vallad. Up next, you'll hear readings by Navraj Santu, Deborah Brown, Alana Veach, and Jan Allen. Here we go. As we give Sophie another hand, let's bring up Navraj. Perfect. Let's bring him.
Hello, everybody. It's also my first time here. I just want to say I do sometimes have a speech impediment, so if that pops up, bear with me. This one is titled Beneath the Silence. For just a glimpse into your solitude and wounds you carry buried deep inside, there is no road I would leave unpursued. What could bridge this impossible divide? I see from afar, despite being near, the mysteries you guard hidden away. Your silence betrayed by eyes full of fear, I wish you would tell me whom I must slay. Perhaps the bonds shared no longer exist. In trying to unlock your hidden door, I twisted till we began to untwist, leaving us both jaded and sore. Perhaps I tried too hard to make you speak, a hill of unspoken words so steep I could never surmount its peak. What right have I to pull at wounds so deep? Your solitude is not a space to fear, but one of depth, a sea I must respect. I've learned to listen, though you're not as near, and find the words you leave me to collect. To love what silence holds within its shell is to see the strength beneath each scar's seal. Appreciate what silence cannot tell. No answers old, no past you must reveal. Though I hate to see you feeling so blue, I know I must wait with patience imbued and walk the path you lead me to for just a glimpse into your solitude.
If you say it one more time, I might be able to get it right. Your name?
Navraj.
So give Navraj another hand. Let's bring up Deborah Brown.
The Talker. A man of many words, nothing to say. A philosopher, psychologist, a counselor, a fool. He's always right. He knows no wrong. What a great gift of knowledge the talker is to mankind. In all degrees, he knows the truth, but truths know he is a lonely man, for he finds peace only in a silent friend, a deaf friend who listens, never intrudes, without a word of argument, agreement, or indifference. But still the talker drones on and on, forever in monotonous flow, louder and louder. He craves for all ears to hear. His voice rages through the empty sky, noiseless sky. Be still. The silent friend can't hear or speak, and all your sea of words are lost in a pit of tears. Be silent, talker, and do. All eyes will turn, all ears will hear.
So we give Deborah another hand. Let's bring up Alana Veach.
Didn't realize that was such a long walk. Sorry. I wasn't going to read this, but I thought, why not? I wrote it a little while ago. It's been a bit of a work in progress, and I'm revisiting it, trying to think about what it says. Anyways, more than figures. I step into the pale moonlight, but rather than kiss my skin, the light gives way to shadowed figures. I see a woman, and with her, many. During the day, she hides from the world and the body it craves. Forced, drawing into solitude, she waits, and I stand. Fixed, engulfed by beauty, but confronted by the ugliness that raped and purged her body, I stand, witness to tonight. Reckoning with that which lay between the sun and the moon and the pressure within my chest, because soon the evening will end, my eyes will be washed over, rest will have me weeping, trying to remember, to forget the night, the moment fleeting, the darkness revealing, the many hers. More than figures.
As we give Alana another hand, let's bring up Jan Allen.
It's great to be back here with this group tonight. What great poetry we're hearing. I'm going to have to ask you to reset for prose, so I know it's an imposition, but I wanted to share with you a slice of a new project that I'm working on under the title Winter Grasses. It's a novel. This isn't right from the very beginning, so I have to give you a little bit of a setup with the characters you're going to hear here. There's Jazz, who's a 34-year-old filmmaker. Liv, who's a retired botanist and the mother of Jazz's close friend Maddie. Sten is 4.5 years old, son of Maddie, grandson of Liv. And Silas is a 58-year-old artist. I know it's a lot, but it'll all make sense. Jazz has just had an upsetting encounter with Sten's father, Bastien. And the setting is Liv's apartment in Kingston. So it's highly local. So, on entering the flat, Jazz saw that Liv had a guest, an artist named Silas, so she poured herself a coffee and settled into a chair in the austere sitting room, half listening to their conversation. The two nodded a welcome while Silas kept up his running monologue. Outside, beyond the big window, she saw Sten waving a hose over the garden in slow circles. As she watched the child, she felt her breathing steady. He soon spotted her and ran into the house to curl wordlessly into her lap. This was what she needed, to hold this boy soft angular frame and inhale his sun-drenched hair. She poked his cheek with an index finger until he allowed a dimple to form, releasing a slow smile. Silas set his elbows on his knees and craned forward, gesticulating with one lean hand to include Jazz as he said, "This place we bought is special. You have to come and see it, a little pocket of nowhere north of Mallorytown. It's so wild out there, you'll love it. It's a forgotten world outside time. And the nature is unbelievable, the variety of species. Not really old-growth forest. We don't have old-growth forest, but close as you get down here. Well, you have to picture it." He paused to run his hands along his skinny thighs. "Okay, the truth is, it's contaminated with trash. A nightmare. Unbelievable pigs lived there." Silas was entering late middle age, string thin and always in motion, carrying 3 days of salt and pepper stubble and a fast retreating hairline. Jazz had gotten to know him and his wife Allie when she babysat their kids as a teenager, back when she spent so much time in Kingston hiding out at her Uncle Leo's. If she didn't love Silas's paintings with their ropey swamps of lemony yellow and fungal green, Jazz couldn't help admiring his nonstop aesthetic fire. Despite all the trouble life had thrown at the man, he continued to burn with an indiscriminate drive that Jazz envied. And she liked being around Silas, and now realized that Maddie's mom did too.
Thank you.
And you just heard from, again, the December 4th and the Journey Continues open mic at the Elm Cafe. Readings by Navraj Santu, Deborah Brown, Alana Veach, and Jan Allen. Up next, you're going to hear readings by Feely, Will Anderson, and Keen Ryan. And it is 27 minutes after 4 o'clock. You are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC. Let's jump right back in where we left off.
As we give Jan another hand, let's bring up Feely.
Hi, first time here also. My first and only poem I ever wrote. The English mechanism of poetry still escapes me. So we'll see what happens. It's called Sanguine Velvet. Silent jungle, break of dawn. Them tigers fostering fawns, fed with flesh, blinded eyes. Who shalt thou grow to be? In what tools shalt thou pray to show thee the tiger's way? From whose fangs shalt thou remove to forge thy claws from cloven hooves? And what of the other deer when they smell the bloody smear? And when thou rise up the shrub, what the fawn and what the cub? What the grass, what the lamb? At what prey shalt thou clamp? What the bleat, what the growl, found its way to thy sound? When thy gut finally grumbles, and thou gnaw till it crumbles, dost thou blame old Mother Nature? Dost thou catch the wide smiling tiger? Silent jungle, end of dawn, them tigers fostering fawns, fed with flesh, blighted eyes, for whom shalt thou grow to be?
And as we give Feely another hand, let's bring up Will Anderson.
Okay, so I'm going to keep reading from a short story that I've been reading here for, it feels like, far too long, but I'm almost done. Completely mindless and absolutely free. All until I all of a sudden see that only now am I ready for what only life will show to me. doubt, fear, anxiety. However, before I get too carried away with myself, I must first of all remind myself. Do not allow your new, freshly found knowledge of what you are, of where you are, of what you are doing, to ossify and overtake your most immediate experiences. In a certain sense, sense certainty is most certainly the richest knowledge, the absolute highest truth, but only when seen from a certain point of view. At long last, I have arrived. The last question left, only one to go. And so, inwardly looking directly at myself, a mirror of the entire world that surrounds it, a clear image of the age, I give in, give up, and let go. And yet, a mere moment later, I find myself standing up straight with my head held high, asking the final question to the only one who could ever know. How am I up so high? Absolutely self-contained, I appear before myself as myself, a mere appearance in a mere appearance of a mere appearance. And yet there is no need to worry. I've done this before, many times in fact, and now that I'm more aware and able to will myself more freely, I just might be able to do something. Something about it. But first, I somehow, some way, need to get to know my thoughts more thoroughly. I need to understand them more fundamentally. I need to uncover their origins, learn their significance, and then I must use any and all insights I am fortunate enough to have to better decide which path to take. However, before I do that, I need to find a certain level of safety and security. I need to build a base, a solid foundation, from the ground up, brick by brick. I need to undergird my most unstable and questionable instincts, otherwise I will have no choice but to release the tension and cast them off completely. Through sensations, by way of notions, I need to make coherent concepts out of my merely intuitive impressions, all in order to act. Only then will I be unfettered and truly free. Thank you.
As we give Will another hand, let's bring up Keen Ryan.
Hello. So, my poem is called Plastic Paddy. And I'm Irish, so I know it's Paddy's a derogatory term, but I can say it, you can't. Plastic Paddy to Irish people basically means when someone really acts stereotypically Irish and kind of tokenist Irish to kind of, I don't know, kind of appeal themselves to other people, just like kind of, yeah, acting sort of overtly so. The poem goes into things like the famine, which is in Irish history, which we refer to as Black 47. And the famine was a genocide of Irish people. And the poem also mentions Joe Biden, who is the current American president, who is an Irish American, who was in America because his family had to move to America because of the famine. And the people who own the plot of land that his ancestors are buried on have banned him from his ancestral burial ground because of him funding a current genocide. So that's a So this is called Plastic Paddy. Can't speak my mother tongue, because the last time one tried, a tongue was cut out of the mouth of a young one. Don't cluck your own. No one with an accent handcrafted from elocution practices can lecture anyone on the essence of tone. Hiberno English is the precocious bastard child living wild, treated as a mutt, can't flow this ishka, and barely English either. The wafting ether stamped me out underfoot, an unlit cigarette butt. Eh, O'Shaughnessy, do I not sound Irish enough? With your Peaky Blinders hat, harp tattoos and such? A.A. Dawson doesn't make you tough. Your penchant for violence and occasional excursions to Ireland? More times in my motherland than most Irish can afford in a lifetime. Clearly you're the expert, as green as your gills and as paddy as purely plastic as the polyester in a Carol's Aaron sweater. It's the plastic in the stomach of the two fish that fought in the oasis somewhere near Egypt. You can guarantee it that the Brits had something to do with it. Biden's own kin banned him from his family plot for sketching every check with crimson ink blots. You're slacking on numbers, saying 47K. You're in the USA because of black 47K. Nothing more needed than heating those afloat, navies gunning them in boats. One more medal on the shelf. You think you're a... Irish slur. Would know... You think a Mick would know better, but plastic won't unearth itself. As plastic as holy water bottles shaped like Virgin Marys. As plastic as those microscopic floating in my capillaries. As if my plastic state of being blew away an adversary, shopping bag, tumbleweeding, not so temporary. Pinta Ishka Baha, is that right? I'm on lesson 30, haven't cobbled Anton, though try as I might. That green owl done me dirty, he only wakes at night. It's the wild within me to speak English more eloquently than the blood coat cavalry, so stop making tea on telly. No longer Louis Armstrong smiling oh so brightly. You are Miles Davis. Smiling's only faking it. Stop pronouncing words that they think is very gas. Stop always accepting all their chattler's cash. Get off the tracks of this thought train and remember your station in your plastic heavy brain. Please, I plead in symphony and indeed many thanks. But profit from the starving, you're as Irish as Yanks.
And you just heard from, again, the December 4th, and the Journey Continues monthly open mic at the Elm Cafe. Readings by Feely, Will Anderson, and Keen Ryan. And up next, you'll hear the final readings in that first round, and readings by Eric Folsom, Anna Johnson, and me. And here we go.
To give Keen another hand, let's bring up Eric Folsom.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here and see all of you. So I've brought another new poem, another poem about growing up in Massachusetts, and another country, another century. So I don't know what it is you don't know, and I'm not sure what I have to reference before I start. You know that Winston's are a cigarette. You know that the Tea Party was actually an old Unitarian temple that was converted into a rock venue on Berkeley Street in Boston. You know that. And then later it moved to Lansdowne Street. And you know the Byrds were an American rock group from the 1960s. And you know the Coliseum was a British rock group from the same era. And carbon tet means carbon tetrachloride. And DDT you've heard of. And the title of the poem, Stranger Than Known, references a line in 8 Miles High, a well-known bird song. And when you touch down. Right. Stranger than known. My parents in both their marriages loved my sisters, each other, and me. But I wonder now that I'm older how plain bad luck and bad judgment blur together into things we must bear. Blue smoke rings rising to the ceiling. One mastectomy, then the other. Secondhand smoke not yet invented it. What conversations should we have had in the years before Winston's taste good? One only whispered about cancer, would never dream of telling the kids. No seat belts in station wagons. Carpentettes stored in an unmarked tin below the kitchen sink. And the town sprayed DDT to kill mosquitoes. The way back of the family station wagon, facing the retreating road backwards, was where I liked to sit and read sometimes. A gale from the car's length, yanking at the book in my hand, Disney's Dumbo, silver and black-edged little golden book, and Dad said sharply, "Hang on to it," just as Dumbo flew out the window. A fluttering dead thing on the pavement, receding, receding in our wake. Dad refused to stop, and I might have shed a few tears. I can't remember. A first step in the long-running fight over how I always read too much. And one year, they hid all the books except the Bible. So I read the Bible. In my teens, I really loved music. With friends, I'd catch the train to Boston to hear concerts at the Tea Party. First on Berkeley Street, later Lansdowne. It was from the latter, I believe, after Colosseum and the Birds, in their unflappable country mode, that we decided to hitchhike home. Some guy gave us a lift by Charlestown and drove up to the Middlesex Fells, where the darkened fells way wove uphill between looming trees and crisp rock cuts, then plunged for a mile to the north. The driver claimed he was saving gas and placed the car in neutral, killed the lights, and switched the key off, and began to glide. Ghosts descending from Puritan hills, rolling silently towards the suburbs. He woke the engine towards Spock Pond, brought up the headlights and horsepower, passing near the entrance of Stone Zoo, where I wondered if elephants had strange dreams of impossible flying high over moats and human fences. When Dad passed away some decades later, I cleaned junk out of the cellar and found Dumbo in a cardboard box, stained with tire tracks, some pages gone. The old man had gone back after all, without saying so much as a word. I pictured him waiting till after dark to run his quiet, buried errand.
Let's give Eric another hand. Now, before I read and end, is there someone else? Cool. Is that you, Anna? I can't see that far. Let's bring up Anna.
Hi, everyone. Okay, this is called Multiplicity of Sensations. I remember the pounding pain from my calf muscle, the right one. The Giants judge hovering over me on the tennis court in Indianapolis. You have 25 seconds or you'll be disqualified. I remember hearing from the sidelines, you can request a physical trainer to examine you, then you'll get an additional 3 minutes. I remember an exasperated yes. I remember smelling fatigue mixed with dopamine and cortisol from tying the first two sets and starting to win the third. I remember my eyes locking with those of my team members, their sockets reflecting back the urgency for my win for us to move on to the nationals. I remember looking over at the trainer kneeling beside me, his hands prodding my sun-exposed legs, light shining behind his head like a halo. I remember him saying, I don't see anything wrong. I remember glancing over at my teammates, their pleading eyes beckoning me. I remember standing up, managing to hobble to the net, one foot after the other, as though a wave of adrenaline carried me each step. I remember making my opponent run for the ball, resulting in a win. I remember my calf muscle indubitably torn, the emergency clinic doctor had told me. I remember I asked, how long to heal? The answer, months of physio. I remember the many nights that turned into months at the indoor club, 12 courts, empty of my weak calf. I remember the rigorous strengthening and stretching, leaning, toes forward, leg straight, toes angled, leg bent. I remember following the stretches even this morning in the 6-court bubble. I remember the shallow, short breaths. I was in a Zoom meeting. The void abyss in the pit of my stomach. I remember the suffocating stronghold of my throat, especially the right side, worrying about my projects, my livelihood, my income, my boys. I remember spending too much time on writing one thing, not responding to emails. I remember being dependent on the editor of my brain for my happiness, the lack of balance in my life. Grabbing onto something, anything, to support my purpose of living. I remember being so obsessed with my newfound nest, the nest of writing, the nest that can hear me and accept me for who I am. I remember wanting money for the sake of what? I remember that money is energy exchanged, flowing like a river of bartering electrons, faced with a multitude of choices. Actions and reactions, beginnings and endings.
Is there anyone else that came in or has been here that wanted to read before I read a poem and we end the first half? Then let's give Anna another hand first. And we've heard some really great poetry and prose readings tonight as well. Let's give yourselves and everybody else a hand. It's called On a Shelf. You have a book of poetry on your shelf. You bought it several years ago. You may have read it front to back. Maybe even more than once, when it was new. You may have read it once back to front, just to be different, you say to yourself. And if you also wonder in that if the journey through this time might be different, or that this time again it might bring you back home. Not this home, but another home in the past, or maybe even to the home of the poet, a poet you never knew, or perhaps you did. And you believe, as you do then, that the poet who wrote the book followed you on your journey through. It must be that, surely it must be, and even now with that book newness gone, of all your other books on your shelf, you'll pull that book of poetry down, read a poem in it, or two, maybe three, and as you sit and read, and each time, every time, it all feels like you've happened upon, run into, and are now having a chat with an old and dear friend. Thank you very much.
And again from, I should say, the December 4th, and the journey continues, monthly open mic held at the M Cafe. You heard the final readings in the first round, and readings by Eric Folsom, Anna Johnson, and me. And it is about getting crowding, 50 minutes after 4 o'clock. You are listening to CFRC. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and do this, I think, and then I'll be right back. And we'll be playing the song that first song very soon. Here we go.
Two out of three geese. Six out of seven seagulls. And this Transylvanian owl. All agree that if they had their own radios, they would tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting just for you. From Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Is a very, very, very fine house.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather, a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Hey, wake up.
How what?
It's noon already. Wake up.
I can't. I didn't sleep much last night.
Why?
I was watching reruns of Project Runway.
Bright lights from electronics block your body's production of melatonin. Keep your sleep area for just that. Sleep. Going screenless at night can help you sleep better, longer. Bring us on. Adults need 7 to 9 hours every night. Do you get it?
And you are, and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And the first thing I'd like to do is to thank all of you out there for having tuned in to this first hour. And I hope you can stay tuned to the second for more from that December 4th open mic event. I would also like to thank all of those who participated in the event that evening, and to Shay, who took great Grace, who took great care of us there, and the Elm Cafe itself for always being there for us. The other thing I'd like to thank are the people who come out just to listen and support. And there are always those at every reading. And I've been in that this is our fifth venue. And although there were the occasional just observer, for the most part, it was rare, but there are always at least a few that just come out, not to read poetry, but just to sit and listen and enjoy. So my thanks to all of you as well. Just a quick reminder, something I do at the end of each hour to let you know that both hours of this show are uploaded each week to my personal blog space for it shortly after I get home at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. We'll remain there for 3 years. I try to get it done by 7 o'clock. I hope to do that again this evening. And before, I've got a few more things. I want to share some calls and events. I will have some time on the show to do that today. But the first thing I'd like to do, again, I mentioned that one of the people who contributed to the funding drive was Meg Freer, and she had requested three songs to play. She wasn't specific with the first two, but she said just something off of James Taylor's Sweet Baby James album. So I think I've got it all queued up here. Here's the first cut. I'm going to play off that. This hour, I'll play another cut in the second hour, and then another one at some point in the second hour. Here we go. Here's James Taylor off his 1970 album called Sweet Baby James. And again, the song Fire and Rain.
Just yesterday morning, they let me know you were gone. Suzanne, the plans they made put an end to you. I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Won't you look down upon me, Jesus? You gotta help me make a stand. Just got to see me through another day. My body's aching and my time is at hand. I won't make it any other way. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seen sunny days that I thought would never end. Seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you again. Been walking my mind to an easy time, my back turned towards the sun. Lord knows when the cold wind blows, it'll turn your head around. Well, there's hours of time on the telephone line to talk about things to come. Sweet dreams and flying machines in pieces on the ground. Oh, I've seen fire and I've seen rain. I've seen sunny days that I thought would never end. I've seen lonely times when I could not find a friend. But I always thought that I'd see you, baby, one more time again now. Thought I'd see you one more time again. There's just a few things coming my way this time around now. Thought I'd see you, but
and you just heard James Taylor off of his, again, 1970 Sweet Baby James album. And as mentioned, that was a request from the funding drive. You'll hear another of his songs shortly after the open of the second hour. But what I thought I'd do is I've got just a bit of time here to I'm going to share. There are three events that are coming up very soon. In fact, one of them is this evening. So, and you even have time after this show ends to check it out if you'd like. It's second Friday night of the month open mic event. It's created and hosted by Abby Miole. This is a this is their quote, non-judgmental space open to all ages and walks of life to listen to or share music, poetry, short stories. People will have 5 to 15 minutes to share, just depending on how many sign up. The event runs from 7:30 this evening to 9:30. Again, it's a second Friday night of the month event. So this is a monthly event. It's at the Next Church, which is at 89 Colburn Street, Kingston. Again,